So how does this sound to you? Our federal government agrees to make billions of dollars in safety net payments to some business owners, no questions asked, at a time when their industry happens to be already raking in some record profits. Well, those businessmen are America's soy, wheat, corn, cotton, and rice farmers. This year, the once every 5 years farm bill, been going on since the 30s, it's under serious scrutiny this year by people who think the system of subsidies needs reform. And considering some $288 billion worth of subsidies are being considered and debated by the Senate this week, we wanted to talk to someone who might get some of that money, maybe. Tom Philpott, a small-scale organic farmer based in Valley Cruces, North Carolina. He's also the food editor for the Environment News website, Grist. Hi, Tom.
Hi, guys.
So let me learn a little bit about your farm. What are your main crops? What do you grow?
Well, my farm is very small. We have about 3 acres, and we grow all different kinds of vegetables, mostly salad greens, but we grow tomatoes and summer squash, winter squash, garlic, spring onions, pretty much everything that you can grow in our climate, which is pretty high up. So it's kind of a northern climate. We're up in the mountains.
All right. So for a farmer up in the mountains of western North Carolina, small scale, we heard what you grow. Is there anything in the proposed farm bill that helps you out?
At this point, I don't really think so. There is a couple of billion dollars this year for the first time for specialty crops, and specialty crops turn out to be what people actually eat, stuff like vegetables.
That's just odd. It's odd that the specialty crops are vegetables.
Right. It turns out that the subsidized crops are stuff that you actually can eat. You can't eat the field corn grown in the Midwest or the soybeans as they're grown. Those are not edible by people. They have to be processed or fed to animals. But the specialty crops are stuff like vegetables. And for the first time, there's a couple billion dollars going to them, but that money will mostly be concentrated in places like California, where there's a really high scale of production, not for small farms like mine.
Well, the president of the National Black Farmers Association told a California paper, because obviously they're watching this bill closely, that he thought the farm aid should be for all farmers and not for those who are politically savvy and not for those who hire law firms and form corporations and form partnerships and all this stuff. He says everybody knows what's going on, including the leaders of the Senate, but they refuse to take on the interests of individuals and do the right thing and put a stop to it. Is he overselling the issue to you, or do you think he's got a point?
I mean, I think he's got a huge point. I mean, black farmers in the United States were frozen out of farm programs from about basically from the 40s on when they started. And in that period, we basically saw the disappearance of African-American farmers. There are very, very few left, and I think he's got a legitimate gripe, no question.
Now, one of the reasons that you know so much about this, we should point out, is that you're a part-time journalist and a part-time farmer. Your column, if you go, is billed as the only column on food politics. So as we listen to you, just to be for full disclosure, are you neutral on this subject, or do you have a political leaning when it comes to the farm bill?
I've got a political leaning. It's a little bit different than most people's because I do think that the subsidies are ridiculous. But I challenge the idea that eliminating the subsidies, and this is an idea that's very common in the sustainable ag world and in the environmentalist world, the idea that if we eliminate the subsidies, a lot of the problems with agriculture and with food in the United States will go away. And I think that the fundamental problem with agriculture now is that we're overproducing these four or five crops, you know, mostly corn and soy. The way that agriculture works, taking the subsidies away will likely not stop us from overproducing them, because what happens in the Midwest is if you're a corn farmer with a couple thousand acres, which is a pretty common situation, say in Iowa, the infrastructure of the Midwest is set up right now to where the only thing you can do is sell corn. Like if you decided to take 500 acres and put it in vegetables, you would really have no way of marketing that right now, because the sort of the built infrastructure is corn elevators and stuff like that. And so I think we need to rethink ag policy and put back some of the controls that were taken away in the 70s that help farmers manage overproduction.
So you're saying farmers really, if you want to make a living, you don't really have a choice?
Say it again?
Are you suggesting that farmers, some of their choice has been taken away by the way the system is set up?
Yeah, some of their choices have been taken away. When the farm program first started in the 40s, the whole sort of goal of it was to help farmers manage overproduction, because in the Great Depression we had a huge amount of production of wheat, corn, and soy, and the market just fell out from under it, and the price plunged. And what farmers did was they kept trying to produce more to make up on volume that they're losing on price, And so the Farm Bill came in, and it wasn't really about subsidies at first. It was mostly about helping farmers manage supply. And that meant paying them to take some land out of production, helping them store corn and wheat and stuff in good years. So if you had a really good year, instead of flooding the market with your corn or wheat or soy, the government would store some of it, and that would make the price not fall quite as much. And right. Farmers wouldn't have this motivation to plant yet more and more and more. And in the 70s, all that changed. And the policy since the 70s has been produce as much as possible.
So one of the things, before we wrap up, one of the things about this Farm Bill, people had hopes that it would change and it would involve some other crops and that it would sort of modernize itself, sort of take right. care of some of the issues that you were talking about. And there is $16 million for research in organic culture, and there's money for conservation in the bill and nutrition programs. Do you think they'll survive the ultimate debate?
Well, nutrition is going to be huge. Nutrition is about two-thirds of that $280 million, or $280 billion we're talking about. Conservation and stuff like that will survive the debate, but it probably won't be funded at the levels that they're promising, whereas the commodity title, which is the controversial one, is funded no matter what, based on formulas. But the conservation programs have to fight for themselves every year in Congress. They're always the first to go in budget crunches, and we're in a huge budget crunch right now.
All right, so as people look forward and they read about this bill in the newspaper, they should look at conservation and commodity and figure out what the heck's going to happen. Tom Philpott, food editor for the Environment News website Grist and small-scale organic farmer based out of North Carolina. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thank you, guys.
Coming up on the BPP, you think your team is good, whoever it is you're rooting for? Have they won 52 games in a row? They outscored their opponents by like 700-something to zero this year. If you're a fan of one Kansas high school football team, the answer is yes. We're going to talk to the coach and a member of that team about the secret to their success.
We also have the most coming up, featuring one world leader telling another world leader to shut up.
Shut it.
Shut it. Not even the street, not in a bar, right there in front of all the other world leaders. It's the most clicked on, emailed news stories on the web. Coming up on the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.